Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt. I'm here today with Dr. Danielle Collins of DeKalb County School System. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do.
Okay. I'm Danielle Collins, and I'm the Federal Program Supervisor for DeKalb County School Systems. I have a bachelor's in education from Middle Tennessee State University. Then I decided to go ahead and get my master's degree in administration and supervision from Tennessee Tech, and loved that so much I went ahead and got my EDS in curriculum and instruction from Tennessee Tech again, and then I have a doctorate in education instructional supervision from Tennessee State.
So you're just sampling all the different universities along the way in your educational path.
Of course, Tennessee Tech has my heart.
There we go. I was just going to make sure that you got that plug in. Well, that's fun. So that's a lot of different areas. So where did you start in the school system?
Okay, my first 8 years in DeKalb County were teaching fourth grade, 9 and 10 year olds at Northside Elementary. And an opportunity arose in February where we had someone at our central office retire and some positions opened up. And I love the classroom. I had no intentions of leaving the classroom. But after prayer and just thinking, okay, I can always come back to the classroom if I don't like central office, I decided to apply for the federal programs position, and I have been there for 17 years. So I obviously fell in love with it.
In that area. And it's funny because I had Kurt Dronbacher was mm-hmm. on here, mm-hmm. and we were talking about how those positions, if you go into a school system, you don't really hear a third grader say, when I grow up, I want to be a federal program supervisor or a director of schools.
Absolutely.
It's not something that you really go to school for, but you end up in those positions. Just kind of the ebb and flow mm-hmm. of education.
Well, pushed me to go ahead and apply is, you know, obviously I went into education to help kids and, you know, make a difference. And my rationale was I have 25 kids in my classroom each year. And yes, I poured heart and soul into each one of those. But at the district level, I could see it as I had 3,000 kids that I could potentially make a huge impact for. So, you know, I thought I'm going to go with, you know, the bigger bang for my buck. And, I like the 3,000, you know, making a difference. So that's why I chose to apply.
Having a bigger input. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to come back to that. But I want to start with you on the same question I ask everybody. Who is your favorite teacher growing up and why?
Well, I do have many teachers that have left. Actually, every teacher I've had, I've taken something away. But I have a lot of favorite teachers for multiple reasons. There were some that, you know, just saw that I was a kid that needed to be loved on, and that's exactly what they did. Others saw me as might need to be pushed a little more and out of my comfort zone. And again, that's what they did. But I do have one teacher, and she actually talks about this also. In high school, I was a senior, and her name's Harriet Cantrell. We had like the family and consumer science class, you know, where our big project was once a week we went to the elementary school. Well, I did not want to go. I wasn't a person who, like, oh, I just knew from, you know, by the time I was 7 years old, I wanted to be a teacher. That was not me. I did not want to be a teacher. I did not want to go and hang out with kindergartners every Friday morning. But that was our project. And I begged her, I will write papers. I will come clean your house. I will wash your car. Just don't make me go hang out with the kindergartners. And she was like, nope, sorry, you're going. You're going. I mean, she would not budge. So the first time I went, it was terrible. I thought, this is not going to work. I got to drop the class. But she encouraged me, and you know, the tough love that I spoke of earlier. Halfway through that semester, those kids had me hook, line, and sinker. I knew that's what I was going to do. So I really appreciate her not letting me talk her out of making me go, because that's really what made my decision to be a teacher.
So sweet. And isn't that really one of the things that makes a great teacher a great teacher? That they see beyond our limited vision, our short-term, short-sightedness, and can see that potential in the students.
Oh, that's a gift. That is when you know you are truly called to be a teacher, is when you can see, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say I was a bad kid, but I was definitely not a kid you would put in a kindergarten classroom. But, you know, she was like, yeah, you're going to go, and you have expectations. And I'm just thankful she saw beyond that, you know, 17-year-old girl that didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm. A good program, and I don't know what kind of program, was this at DeKalb County, Smith County High School? Where was
DeKalb County?
DeKalb,
yes,
County.
Sir.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So I know one of the programs that we've talked about with other teachers is the Peer Buddies program. Mm-hmm. And so we find those students who are a little hesitant to help out in the school, but once you get them in that program and they're working with that student, that special needs student or that elementary mm-hmm. ed student, they love it, and just really want to all of a sudden, oh, this is what I love. I want to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always trying to pull. We need the teachers. And so we're always trying to make those connections for those people along the way.
That's a program that should be supported and encouraged in every school system. Because you if you didn't have a really positive school experience, that may not be an occupation that you think, oh, I need to go into. But once you see the other side of it, and that you're the peer buddy or that you're the teacher, it's a different lens. I think it's a great program.
Okay, so you've been in education for a while. So you're in that fourth grade classroom. It's been a few years. How has that classroom changed, those fourth graders? How does it look different than when you were first started teaching and first started working? I know a lot of things have changed.
It has. First of all, technology. I mean, you give me a dry erase board and an overhead projector, and I was teaching. Now they have like all the cool equipment. You know, the document cameras. I would know what to do. I mean, it would be so exciting. And you know, just the interactive display boards. We are actually a one-to-one device county, so every student from kindergarten to seniors have their own devices. We had three desktops when I was in the classroom, so I can't imagine the opportunities those kids have. So that looks different. The class size would be about the same because we're pretty consistent. We're around 2,900, so. Other than just the technology is what I see. And, of course, now we have really implemented job-embedded professional development. So that would be different also. But other than that, we have the same programs.
Yeah, and that's one of those terms. Anytime I have someone in, especially from the central office, we have acronyms and we have lingo. And I always feel like it's necessary to explain some of those
things.
And we have talked about job-embedded and that switch. And what that looks like today versus when you started, you know, there were 50 applications for that fourth grade position.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now there are hardly any applications for that position where people come in typically from another career field. And that's what fills mm-hmm. that job embedded occupation. You know, it's a different pathway to get into that classroom. Mm-hmm. And is that something that you all are seeing a lot of in your school system?
For sure. Like you said, when I started, I think we had over 20 applicants. So I tried to play it smart and I became a substitute teacher the year before I was going to apply because I knew I had to have some kind of leverage where now we're going to career fairs, to job fairs, We do our try to do like our grow your own. We do all kinds of things because we don't have the applications that we did, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's sometimes we have the second career applicants that have worked very well.
And do you have a hard time finding those people?
Yes, sir.
That want to be in the classroom? And that's something that I know we struggle with is putting our finger on that person who's at TRW or Fleet Guard, and mm-hmm. they've worked for 25 years, but they always really wanted to be a teacher. And so I have a hard time finding them. When they call me, I put them in a classroom quick.
Sure,
you know, today is Monday. I put them in a classroom Tuesday for somebody, but they can be hard to find.
It is. But they have really stepped up in the last year or two, and that's who we have a lot of. Of course, we still have, you know, the traditional teacher that went through the program, but we have probably 15% of our teachers that come with us as a second career,
and
we're thankful.
yes, for sure. And do you see more of those at the secondary or at the middle school, elementary, or do you think it's fairly...
Well, before this school year, I would have said secondary. But this year, we have even had to go as far as a second grade teacher. I mean, you know, it's across the board now.
Across the board, yeah. So we'll come back to retention and some of your retention efforts in just a little bit. But we're going to take a short break. I'm here with Dr. Danielle Collins from DeKalb County Schools, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking to Dr. Danielle Collins from DeKalb County Schools. So your role in DeKalb County Schools, Federal Programs Director, Supervisor.
Supervisor. Yes,
okay,
sir.
Trying to make sure I get the term straight. So what does that mean? So I walk into my office at DeKalb County Schools. What does that look like?
Well, my top priority is to make sure that we are in compliance between federal, state, and local policies. That's number one. And basically, I oversee the implementation and management of federally funded programs. So those programs can be anywhere from Title I, which used to be like the at-risk students. It funds the RTI teachers, the interventionist, educational assistants, and supplies and materials for the students. And then Title II is another federally funded program that we have, which is teacher professional development, like the math coaches and the ELA, English Language Arts coaches, that we have, that they can go into the classroom and help all teachers. Title III, which is probably our most, gonna say, tricky program, because it is English as a second language, and we have approximately 250 students that are in that program, and as far as the rules, laws, policies, it's daily. That is a really tricky program. It's not as tricky as special ed, but it is their cousins. It's very difficult because, you know, you want to do what's best for the kid, but you're also, you know, taking into consideration federal, state, and local policies. We are also privileged to have Title IV, which is more of an innovative. We use that money for like STEAM and parent universities. We have parent classes. It's very broad, but it is so needed because we can get down to the parent level with Title IV. So I do monitor the budget consistently. We have probably the grant that I write is around $2.5 million. The budget is the most important, especially to my director, and I have to evaluate the effectiveness of each of those programs. I do that with the help of teachers and parents. Federal programs insists that parents, stakeholders, community members, that everyone comes to the table and has a voice. So that's very important. And of course, I do all that while I'm adhering to state, federal, and local policy. So it's almost like a game of Tetris some days, but that's what I love about it because it's not the same. Every day is different. So that's my job in a nutshell.
Yeah. So you have all those inputs, all those the federal dollars that are flowing. And I know that sometimes, and as a parent, I get a survey, mm-hmm. and I'm like, mm-hmm. It's another survey that I need to fill out. You know, and understanding because I've been around, I've heard the lingo. I know the processes. Understanding the importance of it, and sometimes that's a big deal. Just communicating, hey, we've got this money. We're going to get $1 million this year from the federal government because it's going to come to us. But we have to check these three boxes, mm-hmm. and we need 75% of the parents to check this box, you know, in their email or in person.
Absolutely.
Or we can't get that funding. You know, I think sometimes as a parent, it's hard to communicate that.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though I know you're standing on the building rooftop yelling it, please fill this out. Please check this box. Do you see that a lot? Is that that's hard to communicate?
Yes. One of the things that I did find out through a survey is that parents did not necessarily want to be contacted by email or phone. They liked the text messages. So we found a program called, you know, it's Remind. I'm sure you guys mm-hmm. have it. That was a good shift, and that came straight from parents. So their input is so valuable because, you know, some parents are like, I don't check my email, but, you know, once a month, and it's too late. Or, you know, the phone calls. I mean, I'm a screener. If I don't have your number programmed in, I may not answer it. So I heard that from parents. So thankful because the Remind or, you know, just the text message, it's great. Now, some opt for both, and we have that available also. Another thing that parents really wanted was a parent liaison and I was able to use that with federal dollars. And she is just a bridge between school and home. So she, you know, she may handle like the phone calls for the bus, you know, issues or after school. It's great. The parent liaison has been a really big asset to DeKalb.
And there are a lot of those roles. I know that you mentioned, math coaches and, mm-hmm. and these roles that are funded with federal dollars that again, as a parent, just, you know, a parent who's, you know, working and staying busy and not just well-versed on everything that's going on in the school, they see these extra people or they hear about these extra people. But they don't realize that the support network that the teachers have with these additional people is huge. It's mm-hmm. it's so important for the education of each student to be successful to have those people in those roles. And so the more positions like that you can have in your school system, you know, the better it is for the students to learn.
Absolutely, because they can bring the latest, the greatest strategies. You know, 2-hour teachers, and the teachers still get to stay in the class teaching the kids, which is ultimately what we want. You know, the coaches get to go out and do all the research and then bring it in to our teachers because we don't want them to miss to go to professional development, but yet we want you to have professional development. So the coaches also, just like the parent liaison, they bridge that gap between, you know, new strategies and our teachers. So the coaches have been a really good addition.
So with this budget, with the federal dollars, I know that it varies in terms of county money and state mm-hmm. money, about how much of your school budget comes from federal dollars. Because I know it varies slightly county to county.
I'm going to say just my federal dollars, not mm-hmm. special education federal dollars. Mm-hmm. Just mine will be around a little less than 10% probably.
Yeah, 10%.
From GP, yeah.
Okay. And I know that in a typical school budget, more comes from the district mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. a little less from the state mm-hmm. and then a little less federal. And so I'm sure that you're keenly aware of the discussions about the Department of Education and how that would change your job. That's a discussion for a different day. But I know that you're keeping track of it because you have to watch for those big changes along the way.
Because that would potentially affect this amount of money greatly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for sure. So, but we won't get into the politics of it. Just know that in the school district, you're monitoring and you're watching to see what happens with that, because it could change.
Absolutely.
How much money is flowing or coming, or your roles and responsibilities in a school district. So, okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more. We're going to take a quick break. I'm here with Dr. Danielle Collins from DeKalb County Schools, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, sitting here with Dr. Danielle Collins from DeKalb County Schools, Federal Programs Supervisor. Got it right that time?
Yes, sir.
So you wear a lot of hats.
Yes, sir.
You deal with a lot of different things. One of the questions, one of the news stories that I had seen talked about free meals for all the students in DeKalb County. What does that look like? How do you line that up? Because I know some districts do that and some don't. I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork in the background.
Well, our food nutrition supervisor is fantastic. So she and I work together monthly to do our percentages, because I keep up with the enrollment and the percentages of one aspect, and she gives the information from SNAP and TANF. So what CEP schools look like. CEP is Community Eligibility Provisions, and that means that the federal government has an equation that they put our student enrollment and then poverty numbers and you know, do all their mathematizing, and they allow us to give every student in our district free breakfast and lunch. Some districts only do certain schools because of the percentage of poverty. Our district meets that threshold of the poverty level district-wide. So it doesn't matter the family's income, that child still receives free breakfast and lunch. We have noticed in the past that is really beneficial for those families who may be just like on the cusp of receiving the benefits but don't qualify through SNAP or TANF, but they still get the reward of a free breakfast and lunch. That has probably been our biggest reward with CEP, because those families benefit also.
Mm-hmm. And I know many of the districts in the Upper Cumberland do benefit from that programs.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know in the past that there are times when the parents had to fill out a form and send things back to keep current. But is that still required, or can you mostly just run the data and information and send that and apply?
Currently, we do not require families to fill out forms. We are in constant contact with USDA and the SNAP and TANF, that department, and we can, between the school nutrition supervisor, Emily, and myself, we can run those numbers. And we do not we don't have to have the parents fill out the forms, which I think that they greatly appreciate.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
and their child still receives the benefits. So as long as we can do that, we'll try our best not to require those papers.
So on a day-to-day basis, those kids that are right on the edge, that aren't worried about the food, how do you see just day-to-day? In the school, how do you think that impacts, and I know the research, but on a personal note, how do you think that impacts that child's learning?
Well, first and foremost, I love it because you just punch in a number and no one knows anything. I mean, you know, when you get into, you know, like late elementary, early middle school, kids start to pick up on certain things, and I just don't think that a child should ever have to worry about the kid behind them knowing if, you know, they get free or reduced lunches. So that's my favorite part about it, that everyone is even, everyone's equal. I love that. And I think it takes away pressure, and it takes, it's just like puts everybody on the same playing field, maybe. But it also, those students don't have to worry. about, you know, okay, I'm hungry, but I can go to school and I'll get breakfast and I'll get lunch and it's taken care of. That is huge. It's huge for our district, especially.
Now, does it continue? Does that program continue on into the summer? Because I know that
we do have summer feeds.
Yes, summer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We have, of course, we have summer school, and it's obviously rolls into that. And then our school nutrition supervisor also runs a couple of weeks called a summer feed program, and we all meet at the high school and. Well, we make lunches and pass those out like a drive-through. So that's always fun.
Yeah. And I know I've seen in Putnam County, there are several churches that partner and they do mm-hmm. weekend backpack mm-hmm. programs where they send backpacks home with students. And I've always felt like that was a great program.
Yes.
Because that student knows at least they're going to have some good nutrition over the weekend while they're gone if school is the primary place where they
for sure
get those meals.
Our coordinated school health supervisor puts together backpacks. We partner with churches and like Farm Bureau, just local organizations. I don't want to name, I'm scared I'll leave somebody out, but we do businesses and churches, and they do come by. They don't know who the children are, but they know, okay, you know, Northside Elementary needs 23 bags. So they pack the bags full of just snacks for the kids, and they go home every weekend and on long breaks. So that's huge.
Yeah. And for our listeners, if they want to participate in a program like that, reach out to your school.
Absolutely.
Because the school will know, or if you don't think that – if you know a school and they don't have a program like that, then get together with your church and mm-hmm. start that program. It's a great concept. And very beneficial to those students who are in need.
And because it's usually on a teacher recommendation. And, you know, those teachers know when those babies are hungry or, you know, it's a great program.
Mm-hmm. So that's a few pieces. And so in perspective, so I know what size is your school district, did you say? About how many students do you have?
Around 2,900.
Okay. So in a school district of 2,900 versus 5,000 versus 10,000, the federal programs, although it may seem like a small part when you say 10%, but if the school budget's $70-80 million, it really is a big chunk.
Yes.
To make sure that you get mm-hmm. those funds as they flow through. So what other areas are you looking to? What other grant programs or innovative things are you trying to pull in through federal programs or pursuing as a school district? What other fun things are you doing?
Well, I will say our CTE, which, you know, the career and technical, Brad Leach, is a phenomenal, I don't know if he begs, borrows, steals, I don't know what he does, but he has got so many grants going and programs. He has an innovative school grant, which, I mean, it's roughly like $680,000. That's huge to a district our size for CTE programs. Those typically go toward math and science classrooms. He does like the 3D printers.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The bionic kits, does a lot of career exploration with the kids. Of course, we have ESSER, which, mm-hmm. you know, over the course of the past 3 years, we, DeKalb has attained around $10.5 million, which is, you know, almost like we, you know, what do you do with that much money? Believe me, we have found uses. Mm-hmm. Our biggest investment was technology. We did upgrade our laptops and display boards, the earbuds. I mean, everything you could think that a student would need for technology, we bought it. Teachers all got the laptops, iPads, just technology that if it had not been for that funding source, we would not have been able to give that to our kids and teachers. We also have 21st Century and the LEAPS grant, which both of those are for after-school tutoring. The LEAPS grant covers elementary, and 21st Century covers middle and high school. And I know a lot of districts don't receive both of those, so we feel very fortunate that we can cover K-12 with after-school tutoring. And that's approximately around 500,000 grouped together.
And those are all big, big programs.
Yes.
I mean, it's a big deal for a smaller, for a smaller district
it's huge
to have those
district.
Things. Mm-hmm. To show you my age.
That's okay. We're the same.
I know. When I was in elementary, we in Coalfield High School, which is a K-12 school, by the way, mm-hmm. elementary and K-12, all the way through K-12, we received laser discs. And that was a huge – some teacher, obviously, someone applied for that mm-hmm. grant and got that. And you know, a laser disc is basically a compact disc. Just going to talk to our listeners. But it's like 18 inches across. It's across. It's a giant disc. And so we had access to digital media and movies and mm-hmm. videos and things that, you know, we didn't have access to. This is pre-internet. But it was very meaningful. It was – We got to see a lot of content. We got to see a lot of historical footage, things that we just were not able to typically see. And so, you know, it has an impact. All mm-hmm. of those programs and you know, it's good for parents. Again, I'm putting my parent hat on to think about the extra work that school systems put in so that we can have these additional things beyond just the regular classroom.
Right. Just the textbooks. I mean, you know, We go so far beyond just a textbook now. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful once you see it all in motion. I do love to go and watch teachers and students interact because it's just magnificent.
Yeah, it makes such a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So you'll continue to work regardless of the politics.
Yes, sir.
Which you're glad I didn't push you into talking about that. But wherever that lands, you all will still be all of our central office federal programs people and grant writers will still be in the school systems, nose to the grindstone, working away to make sure that you have the best for all the students.
We sure will.
Yeah. Okay, we've reached the end of our time. I appreciate you coming out today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, with Local Matters, talking to Dr. Danielle Collins. Thank you.